Well, it's time now for Changing Australia. And the first time that Peter Davis climbed on a motorbike, he was 13 years old, helping his mate muster sheep in Western Australia. And pretty much straight away, Peter was hooked. Decades later, he realised that he could use his love of motorbiking to help others. And Blood Bikes Australia was born. The volunteer group has become a last resort service that transports vital items for free between hospitals and other facilities. Those items include blood, corneas for transplant and urgent pathology samples. And I'm very pleased to say that Peter Davis is my guest today on Changing Australia. G'day, Peter. Welcome.
G'day, Sally. Thank you very much.
Can you remember that first ride on a motorbike as a young 13-year-old lad?
Yes, I remember it very well. It was extremely exciting for me, a city boy in the middle of the bush, basically not off the train to Corpy, and then not long onto a 125 Suzuki two-stroke.
I was going to ask you, because a lot of kids would be getting around on XR75s and RM80s at that time, but you had a bit of power there at the beginning.
Yeah, but I was always a pretty big lad anyway, so that was a bit of a... It didn't have that much power, but it got along okay, and we had a ball.
In a previous life, Peter, you were a cartographer mapping some of Australia's outback, but you didn't end up getting your licence until many years later, and it's your pride and joy. What kind of bike have you got now?
I've got a Honda Shadow, which is, I always jokingly call it an old man's bike. It's a tourer. I love it. I bought it when I first got my licence about 20 years ago, and I've done 173,000 on it now. A sizeable chunk of that's been doing blood bike stuff. Yeah, it's great.
So how did blood bikes come about here in Australia? Because there's some similar groups in other parts of the world, Peter.
Yeah, it's not all that romantic, really. What happens is my wife doesn't like to ride and doesn't like to be a pillion, and so it became a very individual thing, riding the bike. And whereas my wife had no problem with me going out, you know, you sort of feel like it's a very individual, almost a selfish thing. So, and a mate of mine in Scotland was doing Blood Bikes Australia. So I thought, oh, that's a good excuse to go for a ride. So, so I started looking into what was needed in Australia, looking at the current career situation and so forth and so on. And anyway, I got a friend of mine worked for the Mater here in Brisbane, and she put me on to Deb Hornsby, who looked after Mater pathology, and Deb got it straight away, this whole idea of being a last resort. The fact that, you know, the courier system for medical couriers in Australia is actually very, very good and quite sophisticated. But where the system falls down is those last resort things where a test needs to be done, or perhaps someone has to underestimate the amount of blood required for an operation. These last resort things, and you can't pull a trained medical courier out of thin air. So, and that particularly became very evident during COVID, which sort of hit about 6 to 8 months after I started in 2019.
So how does it actually work then? You've got a series of volunteers, and then messages or requests get sent out if there's no other way to get something moving pretty quickly, Peter?
Yeah, well, you know, it's almost a cliche now to say there's an app for that. And one of my volunteers from Geelong, she is an amazingly talented software engineer. And so we worked together to develop a series of things that operate like apps. They're actually better than apps because they link directly to the web. So what happens is that the healthcare provider has a link where they can see within a 200-kilometre radius all the available volunteers and where they are at that moment. The volunteer, every volunteer has their own individual link which they log into, and they can make themselves available or not available. So if they make themselves available, they'll become visible to the healthcare provider. The healthcare provider, when they need something done urgently and they don't have one of their normal couriers in place, they look at their link, see who's available, touch the little icon, that person's name and telephone number comes up, they ring them, just to confirm that they are actually available, and then they enter the details of that job directly onto the system, which goes directly to that volunteer's own personal hub. Mm. And that's the way it works. So we have scheduled jobs as well where we help out where there isn't a courier service. Mm. Those available jobs are also seen on the volunteers portal, and then he or she can take it. Mm.
Mm. How rewarding is this for your volunteers when they get that message and they're able to help out to deliver, whether it's blood, biopsies, stem cells, corneas, all sorts of things, or paperwork very, very quickly? What do they say to you about what that's like
for
them?
Well, it's fantastic. From their point of view, I mean, we all love to ride. That's the common denominator. And and then to be able to ride and help people out is like a huge bonus. And from time to time, you know, you have some special cases that occur, and that always touches your heart a little bit and makes you understand the value of the service that you've done. But, you know, it's a bit weird because, you know, we're the only selfish volunteers, you know. I mean, we all look forward to getting on the bike and going for a ride. So,
what can it mean, especially in regional areas, Peter, where they might not have access to couriers and so on? Have there been some cases? What sort of reaction have you and your volunteers got from nurses and other professionals when your riders have been able to jump in and help?
Well, you know, we're all pretty sort of modest sort of people. I mean, we always emphasise we are riding because we love to ride, you know, and there's been some very amazing fortuitous situations that have occurred. One particularly happened at the Mildura Hospital. They had inadvertently run out of anti-venene, which is a situation that they don't want to happen. And just, you know, anywhere happens by accident. Anyway, they had arranged for us to pick up some anti-venene from the hospital in Melbourne and take it to the airport, and then it got taken to the airport and was delivered to the Mildura Hospital. So it was more of an insurance type situation, you know, just in case. But they actually got in contact with us the next day, and they said that a young fella had come in with a snake bite that afternoon and used the antivenin. And so you think, wow, that was good planning, but to be able to help like that is fantastic. Mm. And, you know, there's lots of little ways. Like recently we transported some breast milk from a mum who'd had a difficult birth, she'd gone home and the baby was still at the mother's, and so she was expressing breast milk, but she still wasn't 100% herself. So we picked up the breast milk and took it to the hospital so the baby had her own mum's breast milk. You know, there's, you know, stories like that all the time. You know, it's really cool. It's an amazing thing to be part of it.
You're listening to Changing Australia. My guest today is Peter Davis, who founded the group called Blood Bikes. Peter, I know from what you're saying that you absolutely love to ride, but you're not a big fan of committee meetings and things like that. So this is actually, you've created this model in Australia that you're not a charity. The riders kind of look after themselves and pay their own fuel, and that's their contribution. Is that how it kind of works?
Exactly right. It took me ages to sort of define it because I had the advantage of being the first person. I really had no expectations, but I thought, oh, there might be other people and would like to do it. Now we've got 400 volunteers Australia-wide. But I'm not a fan of committees, and when I say that, it's not committee for committee's sakes. It's just that so often you see charities and that get so caught up in themselves that they forget really what they're all about. And so I had the advantage to be able to design a system that sort of suited me. I saw the opportunity to be able to design a system that didn't require a management structure per se. So what I did was I devised a rider agreement, which every rider must agree to in writing, and that covers, you know, licensing, insurance, code of conduct, uniform, and then also the qualifications. There is a nationally recognised qualification called Certificate in Blood Transport, which you can do online. You do some study through videos, so forth, and then do. And so that's a requirement. So it took me ages to figure out how to define this system, because we're not a charity. I don't have a bank account. Every volunteer is their own volunteer. So eventually I figured out the best way to describe it is we're the world's first volunteer franchise, because in essence that's what it is. Every volunteer is like their own blood bike group, if you like, and we have regional coordinators that are communication hubs in regional sense, because it's a very individual thing, you know. Most of the time it's just one person on a bike taking something from A to B, but the regional coordinators allow to create a bit of a community, and we actually had to devise a collective noun for blood bikers, because there wasn't one. The collective noun for a stationary set of blood bikers is a clot of blood bikers.
I actually thought you might say that.
And if we're moving, it's a hemoglobin of blood bikers.
Of course it is.
And we took a vote on it. So it was all very democratic.
It's wonderful. And just finally, Peter, what's it been like for the reputation of those who ride with this kind of service, and also has it contributed to other bikers as well? Because sometimes people, despite the situation, they can come off. The accidents, that can be a reality.
Yeah. Look, from the point of view of our volunteers, it's a lovely feel good thing to be able to do. And of course, one of the things that we're very careful to emphasise is that we're not an emergency service, so we all take that little bit extra care while we're riding, and especially when we're riding on the job, to make sure that we minimise the opportunity for something untoward to happen. But, you know, yes, it can happen. But in funny sort of, one of our volunteers was just doing his induction the other day, and he was just getting on his bike and just toppled too far, and he was stationary and just fell over. But he fell over on his shoulder and broke his collarbone. So, but these things can happen. We're very fortunate that we've got some amazing human beings as our volunteers, and the flow still comes of people interested in. But we get inquiries about four or five a week about people that would like to volunteer.
Such a good, simple idea. Peter, it's been lovely to have you on this morning. Take care out there on the roads to your clots and hemoglobins who are doing this fantastic work. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sally. Thanks for having an interest in it.
That's Peter Davis there, the founder of Blood Bikes Australia.